This is Women's Voices and Women's Stories on Yin Radio, and I'm your host, Sandy Billings. Today's show is called Artistic Inspiration. It's a collection of stories from artists, painters, mosaic artists, potters, collagists, creative people who I have come across in Moscow, Idaho. But they don't all come from Moscow. We start with Maori artist June Grant from New Zealand, then to mosaic artist Rebecca York from the countryside in North Idaho. Next are two Moscow residents and artists, Ruby Valentine paying homage to another artist, Shirley Saltzman, and Jennifer Rod paying homage to Ginevra Sloan. Jennifer Rod is followed by her sister, potter Rebecca Rod, who shares her artistic and spiritual inspiration from the Great Mother. From KRFP Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio. Today our theme is Artistic Inspiration. Let's get started. Artists work with symbols. In Art History 101, you learn about meanings of symbols, like a halo indicates holiness and purity. A cave symbolizes the origin of life or resurrection. An owl means knowledge. Fruit represents sexual passion. An egg, fertility. But some symbols are more obscure, like ivy as a symbol of eternity, and a bundle of twigs meaning unity. Symbols work because they're universal or cultural. They relate to a culture's mythologies, the beliefs that define the culture. So when Maori artist June Grant talks about her art to Americans, she takes time to explain the symbology of her art.
These are manaia, and manaia in context of our meeting house are usually around the heads of our warriors. They look, in the meeting house, they look like a lovely curvilinear design that swirls around the head of the ancestors. When you look closely, you'll see the beak of a bird and the eye, and the body will be serpentine, so it looks like a little bird man figure. These are guardian figures, and they're around the head of the person because they're the head is the most sacred part of the body. So in the context of the meeting house, the warriors are all surrounded by these manaia, which are guardians, guarding their brains and their mental ability.
June Grant is a painter who works in the bold graphic styles of the Maori. It's based on a traditional Pacific tribal art with bold lines, bright colors, and laden with symbology. Her paintings are not concerned with realism, but with telling a story. June Grant visited the Northwest as an artist-in-residence at the Evergreen State College in spring of 2008. Her presentation on May 28 was about her art, in particular the collection of pieces called The Journey. It's a series of four paintings that tell a story, and it's a story of survival. June Grant has survived breast cancer.
This is called The Discovery, and this is the first of the paintings that I did in the series. And this is me in New York. In 2003, I was in New York with a friend, and we were looking at doing marketing up there. The Mercedes building, is it Chrysler building, was there. And so that's, I wear that as my tiara. So this pattern here represents the sea, Moana Nui, the Pacific Ocean, and there are two hammerhead shark forms there. And the reason this painting was significant to me was that I was lying in bed in New York with my hands on my chest watching a television documentary about, in fact it was a news item, and it was about a young woman in Utah had gone missing. Her name was Elizabeth Smart, and they couldn't find her. And I was lying there and I felt a lump in my breast, and I thought, is that a lump? No, that's not a lump. But the reason I could always recall Elizabeth Smart when I thought about the time that I felt, so it was a defining moment in my life. I thought something strange has happened, but I still dismissed it. And so the painting is about me in New York making a discovery. I found the lump in July, and it was October before I even went to the doctor, because I thought, we don't get cancer in our family, because we just, you know, we don't get cancer. And I didn't know anybody else with breast cancer, and there was no reason to believe that it wasn't just a normal little lump of some sort. So when the doctor, after the biopsy, said, I'm afraid it is cancer, I thought, who? I just stepped outside of my body and I thought, I wonder who he's talking to. He can't be talking to me. So until you have the surgery, you don't know how bad it is. and I felt as if I was drowning and I couldn't breathe properly. And so I was always breathing into the top of my chest. I was sort of, I went into a automated mode of just getting on with life and being happy and taking lots of photos in case I wasn't going to be around for long and all of those sorts of things. But so these paintings were painted in the cancer lodge when I had 6 weeks of chemotherapy and radiation, and I didn't know what else to do, and I thought, I can do this, I can paint this last set of images that my children will be able to realise, you know, what sort of a journey that I was on.
Remember the Manaya, the serpentine birdmen guardian figures? After her discovery of breast cancer, June realized that she needed guardians and put Manaya in her paintings, and many other symbols about life, death, and connections.
So here I am, with Manaya holding me to the ground, and this is the second painting, which talks about the surgery. So I painted all the things that were really important, and one of the things was, well, obviously everything's important when you're dying, but the canoe denotes my where I'm from. I'm a canoe person. Our people travelled from a homeland in Hawaiki to New Zealand in the year 500 AD, and we are obviously travellers. We travel by the stars and by the currents, and this denotes, this is that moko chin pattern, so it denotes my matrilineal ancestry, but it also, that pattern's the owl, so you can see the owl there, the eyes and the beak. So this is the owl, so this talks about everything I hold dear. This is about who I am and where I'm from. These are the petroglyph images again, which talks about my ancestors making their marks on the land. And this is the big Manaya. I painted a really huge guardian because I really needed something to help me through the battle, and I really wanted something from the spirit world that was going to... So even if I painted it, it was in thought. It was like, I need some help here. And so typically in the meeting house, the figures are... they have images between the legs, usually one, and it's just a simple symbol of life carrying on. And so I painted my four children here. These are my four little children, they're not so little now, and their children. So this was about this was a story about me in myth and legend and in somebody's mind leaving something behind for my children. The feather is the huia feather, and the huia feather denoted leadership, but it also suggested values, that what you hold dear to your heart is what you take on to the next world, and it's what you leave behind for your children. So the feather was about retaining things of value and importance.
Between the discovery and that second painting, June came to a sense of reality. But then she moved on to the experience of dealing with the cancer on a physical level. She started chemotherapy. And she had to deal with death, which was suddenly all around her.
And I thought, how am I going to cope with chemotherapy? Because you go bald, don't you? And I said to the surgeon. He said, yes, you do. I said, is there any way out of it? Is there other ways we can do it? He said, you can choose not to have chemo. And I spoke with my family and I said, what do I do? And they said, well, you don't want to lose your hair, Mum. So I thought, well, how important is it on the scale of, do I want to live or do I want to lose my hair for a year? And so we discussed it, and then we decided we were going to make a really good event out of it. So my grandson, who was only 12 at the time, was he'd come home and say, Nana, have you lost any hair yet? The first lot of chemo wasn't that bad. It was like, really? That's not so bad. I can do this. But it was only the first dose. And then you're sort of slowly poisoning. You know, you get poisoned, which is what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to clear out all the cancer in your body. Sadly, it clears out everything in your body. So your immune system collapses. And so you're quite vulnerable there for a while. And I got paranoid about the fact that, you know, that I might survive cancer and die of a cold. And one of the sad things that happened was that... in this painting, it symbolises, the upturned canoe symbolises the death of people. And as I said to you, we celebrate our funerals. It's one of our big events. When somebody dies in our community, we hold up for 3 days and we grieve with the family, and it's a time of sadness and fun and happiness and mourning and whanaungatanga, that relationship, sharing with people. And it's a whole feeling of love. One of my friends and confidants, who was a cousin of mine, she was younger than me. She found out she had cancer, but she had a month to live. they took her home to that village I showed you, and she was dying there. And her son came to visit her, and he was 18. He was just a wonderful boy. And he rolled his car and was killed coming to see his mother. So she had to attend his funeral the week before she died. So it was like all this dreadful sadness. And then another friend of mine who was a wonderful composer, and he was bringing back all the old music, flute music, to prominence again, and his music playing was beautiful, and he died within a month. So at that stage I thought, there's a little plot here, and we're all being killed, and we're all dying of these terrible diseases, and I don't know why, but it was just a time of our lives. But the other thing that happened too, which I found really quite strange, was that the fantails, which are beautiful birds in New Zealand, they're little cheeky little fantails, and they come and fly around, and they're just fabulous little birds. And my mother was always scared of them, and she used to say, oh, somebody's going to die, the fantail's in the house. And my father would say, oh, rubbish, that's a good luck symbol. When I first got diagnosed with cancer, I noticed that the birds were around all the time. The fantail particularly would just alight on a branch. And when I was doing chemo, and I'd walk around the lake, because I used to think, I don't feel very well, I'm going to lie on the couch. And I thought, I could lie on the couch and feel really bad, or I could walk around the lake and get some endorphins into my system. So I would go for a walk. Well, the fantails would be around me, and I'd think, but there are no trees. These fantails were constantly with me. And even the week before I left, I was at the clothesline putting washing on the line, so the line was like this. Fantail alit on the clothesline and was hanging on, and I couldn't believe that a bird would get that close, and especially a fantail. And it's been 5 years now, that they are still guardian symbols for me, and they're still appearing.
Those fantail birds carry June through to her last painting in the series, The Journey.
So this was the last painting in the series, and this whole series was cathartic. It was like, yay, got over that, you know. We have a treasure chest, which is called a waka huia. Waka is the canoe, and huia is the feather, which denotes the leadership and the power. So we have these little beautiful carved chests, which and they're only small, but a lot of art collectors collect these waka huia. So you've got the two manaia at the top there, whereas the two manaia there, and there's the top of the box, and the manaia there are hanging on to my hair is growing back. And I always put my hands, I've painted my hands into my paintings. I'm always hopeful that there's a palm reader in the audience who's going to say, you're going to live a very long life, and you're going to be happy and wealthy. You will travel. Anyway, I haven't met anybody yet that. So all these images in here, and this work is about the symbolism that's related to my art, who I am as a woman. It's related to my personal journey, but it was a way of actually getting it all out there for my children and for the legacy. This is my hospital number, which I put there, and that's my father's military number. So it's like, come on, Dad, I want you and your army to help me out with this, you know. This is a piece of weaving work that my grandmother did, and this is a little tiki that I wear, and it's called Te U'oro, and it belonged to Maggie Papakura, my grandmother. And these are the two little babies. When you've had chemo, it sort of shuts your womb down, so you can't produce any more children. Not that I was at an age where I would have produced any more children, but it's always that loss, that bereft. As a mother, you always want to have children or grandchildren, so that was just an acknowledgement that there was going to be no more children, and the little manaia again. And so that was a series of four paintings that I did.
As June took her journey with breast cancer, she dealt with the fears, pain, hopes, and losses through her art. The symbols are not hidden like secrets in the paintings, waiting to be found out by the vigilant interpreter. They're right out there, surrounding the central figure of June at the various stages of treatment. And now that the paintings are done, they've served their purpose.
The paintings have all sold. It sounds ridiculous, but I had no attachment to them. Once they had painted them, they were out of my life.
June Grant has been declared cancer-free by her doctors. They don't even want to see her again, except as much as anyone else who should get checkups. She has survived physically. It was through her art and her symbolic expression of the journey that she dealt with the emotional side of cancer. You can view an image of all four paintings of the journey at spiritwrestler.com. Follow the links for June Grant and the fourth painting in the series, The Journey, then click on the paintings to see the entire series. or you can contact Yin Radio at vpfound.org for a direct link to the images. Now, like June Grant, Rebecca York has a story of art and illness. I ran across Rebecca York at the 2008 Renaissance Fair in Moscow, Idaho. I was on a break from working the radio station KRFP booth selling gyros as a fundraiser. I was just running around to see all the wares because it is the best show in the region, and I only had a few minutes to take it in. I was admiring these gorgeous, bright, useful pieces made of glass and mirrors, mounted in windows and doors, perfect for working with the natural light in any space. The artist making these glass mosaics is Rebecca York. She asked me, if I knew her story, and since I didn't, I turned on the recorder and learned her story to share it with you. It's a story of a forced slowdown. This installment is Rebecca York's story as I heard it at the Ren Fair. If you're online, go to rimrockcreations.com while you're listening and see Rebecca's work. And imagine being in an outdoor booth on a sunny day, talking to the creator of those pieces.
I did licensed home daycare for 18 years and foster care. And in May of 2003, I ended up in emergency, not knowing what was wrong with me. Well, they couldn't find anything wrong, so I ended up going to my regular doctor again, and he ran a bunch of tests, and I had hepatitis C with level 4 liver disease. And, you know, I had no idea. Well, anyway, that was 2 weeks before my daughter was to graduate from U of I here in interior design and architecture. She's my artist. And, anyway.
And we can take care of customers.
Yeah, okay.
Just so you know, anytime.
Yeah, if you need help, just let me know. So anyway, December of that year, I realized I was so sick those 6 months on the I was on interferon and ribavirin. I was so sick I couldn't do anything, but I remember it was Christmas, and I thought I've got to do something. So I started making mosaics. I saw it on HGTV. I saw them do a ball, and I thought, I can do that. I've got junk around here. So I started messing around, and my daughter opened them for Christmas, and my son-in-law, who's Native American, I made him a really cool Native American eagle-like thing and with deer bone and all kinds of stuff on it, mixed media type thing. And my daughter convinced me I should share this. And so my birthday was January 12th of 2004, so she found out all the information. Like I said, she was going to school down here. So she gathered up all the information, had photos professionally taken of my gifts to them, and entered me into this show.
Oh, yeah.
So this is my fifth anniversary of my first show ever, first juried art show, and my first art piece ever sold. And that's how this started. And it's just strange.
Yeah.
How it all started. And then I remembered I had these windows out in my shed and decided to develop a way to work on the glass of old windows. And through trial and error, I finally did.
And that's beautiful.
I mean, that's my really nice. That's my made-up thing of it all. Mosaics are, you know, people do that. But
yeah, I mean, here's a mosaic.
Mosaic,
and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so this is your you know, you can see all your creativity.
Yeah.
But it's not your... what you originally designed, unique.
No.
I mean, it is unique.
What I really made up different. Yeah, that's you won't see anywhere else, you know, is this.
Uh-huh.
Or at least nothing quite like it.
And describe it to me, since we're also talking to people who can't see it.
Well, it's old wood-framed windows, and sometimes they have some history. Well, they all have history, but sometimes really known history. And I take stained glass and hand cut it, make up my own patterns, hand cut the stained glass, and mosaic it onto the old windows, and so that you can actually see through them.
So do you collect the glass?
Well, I started out with found objects, and then I found a traditional stained glass artist, and I buy her scraps. I still buy her scraps. But I buy big sheets of glass, too, now, because I want mega stuff. You know, I want big hair, and, you know, I do mermaids with long, flowing hair and stuff, so I want big, huge hunks of glass. So I do buy the big, huge sheets now.
Where do you find your inspiration? You have flowers, you have geometric patterns, you have the fish here. among...
I just think of... I really don't know. I think of things that would be... really cool, like an eternal aquarium, like a fighting fish that never dies, a beta fish that never dies.
Yeah.
Let's see. Eternal gardens. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just start. I think about the colors I want to use, and maybe some kind of a theme, and I go from there. That's about it. Sometimes I'll jot down drawings of what I want to do, and. Uh-huh. Go from there. I haven't even done a lot of things I want to do still that I have drawings of, you know.
But how does it all relate also to your recovery? You said you had to do something.
Yeah, well, I've always been a go-getter, you know, and I was a single mom for years, so I ran a whole household and a daycare business and everything, and then I was knocked down where I couldn't do anything. And I guess... it just kind of made me take a big long look or something, and I found this creativity within me that I never knew I had. I knew I was a little creative, but I never knew to this extent. And I don't think I'm any more special than anyone else, though. I think we all have something if we would just sit still long enough and be still long enough to see it.
But you were forced to sit still.
I was forced to, because I am stubborn, I guess. And I wouldn't have had time. I never would have had the time. Maybe not even the money, really, to get into this like I did. But it just kind of evolved, and it's come.
Is this what you do now?
This is what all I do. Yeah. This is it.
And how's your health?
My health is pretty good. It's getting better and better all the time. The chemotherapy I was on did me more damage than anything, of course. I have fibromyalgia, I have a lot of problems, but...
but you still have so much energy.
Well, it's getting better.
Yeah.
And I had a really low vitamin D deficiency, too, that was just found out. So I'm on mega doses of vitamin D now. This is my second dose. So that's helping a lot. But, this is my passion now. I mean, this is, I just feel like I'm lucky to do this, and I would give it to people if I could.
What's your workshop space like?
It's a bedroom turned into a workshop, and then the next room I'm overtaking it to. So we have two other bedrooms that are being used for actual bedrooms, and two that are being turned into other things right now. But, yeah, and I have a son still at home. I have a 28-year-old and a 17-year-old. She's gone, obviously, but my 17-year-old will be graduating next year. And when he's gone, his room is really big, and it has an outdoor entrance, and I'm going to make it into a gallery.
So you'll have a gallery there on site?
On site, and we live on acreage between St. Mary's and Harrison. And I'll have a place where people can come and see my stuff. Maybe I might teach classes. I might even have a retreat thing going on. We're thinking maybe a teepee and fire in the middle and a woman's retreat maybe. Mike has built a trail up our property, which will be done all the way up to the top by then. It's a biking or a hiking trail, so it'd be an outing. And you can see lakes and rivers everywhere up there, you know. So that might be a long-term goal.
Cool.
You know, yeah. If I want to share that property,
if you want
that space,
to.
We'll see.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well,
I'm glad to stumble across your story.
Thanks.
You can view Rebecca York's work at rimrockcreations.com. Now for a little musical break. This is called Fingers Create. It's by Canadian singer-songwriter and an artist in her own right. An artist with the guitar, Kristen Young.
Trouble, and you know. for me to say. It's nice to hear from you, babe. It felt like years from you, baby. Or at least I love you. Your storm comes with your rain to break my branches. I couldn't be alone tonight. So hey, it's nice to hear from you, babe. It felt like years from you, babe. Did I know?
You're listening to Yin Radio, and today our theme is Artistic Inspiration. Installment number 3, Homage to Shirley. This piece comes from an art reception and exhibit opening. The show was a collection of pieces by women artists in honor of other women artists. Women honoring women. The format of each piece was art contained in a box. One was an old silverware case displayed open. Another is a homemade box about the size of a shoebox. Installment number 3 is my conversation with artist Ruby Valentine at the show's very packed opening reception.
I am thankful for this challenge that Laurel and Louise Colson put forth in order to have this show with this focus on it. Because for the last 2 years, I've been so much helping older folks get organized and everything, that all I've been doing is taking stuff and shoving it into my big studio. And when this project came up, I had the opportunity to focus. And so I focused on this. And as a result of this, I have 4 other shrines started. One to Lois Blackburn, one to Betty Crocker, one to my son, and one to my daughter. And that all happened as a result of this style format.
And are you calling this a shrine as well?
This is an homage to Shirley Salzman. Uh-huh. And this is Shirley, 3 pictures of her. She's been a friend of mine since the very early 80s. I chose her not so much because of the friendship, but because as an artist, she works every single day. And she does it whether she's at home or whether she's visiting or whether she's traveling or no matter whatever else she's doing. That's what she does, is make art. And this is a piece that she did, which was a performance piece for a thing called Bearing Witness. It was a calendar that had all of these naked bodies in peace symbol signs or SOS or whatever. And she did that in Arcata.
And I'm going to describe it because I like it quite a bit. It's probably 100, less than 100.
There were 68
women of all sizes and shapes, naked, holding hands in a big circle, but not just a circle. They're on the coast. They're on a piece of land jutting out over the coast. And inside the circle, the women are all linking arms and making a peace sign. And the image isn't directly from up. It's at an angle. So
kind of looking,
it's very nice.
Slightly down. You're
looking down from above, but not from straight up. So you see the shape, but you see that it's real humans. It's a real message and call for peace.
Yes.
And women are the peacemakers.
Yes, they are. And her paintings vary from this kind of texture and acrylic paint to watercolor and chalk. And she does a lot with collage. Like this was a Jehovah's Witness flyer that she added to.
And she added, one of my favorite elements she added was the a good witch from The Wizard of Oz on her pink dress and her big hat.
Yes, that's right, and that smiley face.
Yeah, very
and
whimsical.
And this cherub up here. She can also paint realistically. She's the adoring of the Virgin of Guadalupe, so that's in a lot of her artwork. So here's a picture with the Virgin and a painting with the Virgin in it. She's actually standing at the beach, but I cut her out and put her on another one of her paintings. Then these are invitations to her shows. She does a lot of collage work, and these are very big. They're like 24 by 36 or larger. And there are all these little, you have to really look carefully to see what's going on, but this bodhisattva has an aura of all of these watches, because time is such an essential part of Buddhism. And this is her business card, the Mona Lisa holding the Leaning Tower of Pisa and the who's that, David?
Michelangelo's David.
Yeah. This is the piece that she did after 9/11. She calls this one Be Fruitful and Multiply. And that's all stickers.
Really?
Yeah.
That's neat. It makes a good card, too. I would love to see the original, though.
I can give you a copy of this. I have several of these if you'd like to have one. This is a piece that she gave me when I went down to a raw foods institute. And I was going to only do raw foods, and she sent me that. And on the back, it says, good luck.
And it's a, I'll just say it's a woman, Shiva eating pizza.
That's right.
Not raw foods.
And here's Jerry Garcia dressed up as Santa Claus.
Well, and I'll tell you what, one of the things, not the only thing, one of the things, hi, Lois, that I liked about it is... it looks shrine-like. So it's funny that you. It looks Hindi shrine-like to me. I mean, just in a conceptual back, big picture kind of way. When I stood back, I thought, you know, the bright reds, the colors, the intricacies, and the use of some gold. That just to me, I thought. That's what I thought.
Yeah. Now the other thing you should know about this piece is that she sent me each and everything in the piece over the last 10 years. She goes around her place with a big file box and just throw stuff in it and then ships it off to me. And so I have this treasure trove to look forward to and to look through.
Nice. Thank you, Ruby Valentine.
Thank you, Sandy. It was lovely to speak to you tonight.
Ruby Valentine talked with me about her art project, Homage to Shirley Saltzman. Our next installment comes from the same exhibition opening as this last one, Women Honoring Women. It's from Jenny Rod, and it's called Homage to Ginevra Sloan. Ginevra Sloan has been an artist since childhood, and that was a long time ago, before her hands were gnarled. She worked in large paintings and woodcuts, although perhaps those descriptions are a bit too narrow. Ginevra has never been afraid to experiment. She would use photographs in the paintings, actually embedding them collage-like into her work, or lace, or fall leaves, or barn wood. Ginevra would go to Kinko's and make copies of the photos she used in her work, and behind the counter, Jenny Rod would help her. Jenny, 30 years Ginevra's junior, studied the great artist's process and began to ask questions, because Jenny Rod is an artist, too. Jenny describes the development of their friendship.
And she would come in and have these things that she wanted to photocopy, or she would have little, she would have a picture of a print that she was copying to frame up to give to someone. And I'd say, you know, if we make these like this big, we can put magnet on them, and you have little refrigerator magnets, you can have a whole show of your, you know. And so I helped her make those, and then we got to know each other there that way, so... pretty much through Kinko's. And then she would, like, copy the bowl picture. She'd take a photograph of a doorknob, and then she would enlarge it and fit it into a painting somewhere where there was a doorknob. And I just thought, oh, well, that's pretty novel. I mean, I thought you either paint or you But you don't mix them.
So. And she does both.
And she does both, you know. And she's like 30 years older than me, and she's more inventive than I am. I mean...
The two women struck up a friendship around those visits to Kinko's. Ginevra offered Jenny advice about her work, and Jenny adopted some of Ginevra's painting collage techniques in her own work. Eventually, they had a show together. It was a combination of Jenny's newer work and Ginevra's previously unreleased prints. So when Jenny was invited to do a piece for the Women Honoring Women art show, of course she stepped up to honor Ginevra Sloan. 19 women participated in the show. The theme was Homage to Women Artists, and it was exhibited at Above the Rim Gallery in Moscow, Idaho, in spring 2008. The artists were all to work in a box. Each piece was contained in a box that was framed, contained, or became part of the work. Most were about the average size of a silverware storage box displayed open and mounted on the wall. One actually was a silver box. At the show, Jenny talked about Ginevra, their friendship, and the piece that Jenny did to honor her friend.
You know, she was kind of like, I got her input on it, and she was like so honored. She was like, oh, I'm so honored that you would do this, and I can't believe you're so, you know.
Excellent.
And she said, oh, I wish I could do one for you. And I said, oh, you know.
Can she work at all anymore?
Not really. You
Environment can, or physical or both?
Both. Both. And, I mean, you can see that her hands have been pretty, I mean, they're pretty crippled up. When she was still in the apartment, right now she's in the nursing side, but when she was in the apartment, our women's caucus was doing artist trading cards.
Yeah.
And so we went over and I did some. We did some together, and it was real hard for her to scale down to that size because she's so used to working big and doing big things. It was amazing for me to watch because I realized how I adjust to that because I, you know, it depends on what kind of a space I have to work in, what I do. And she always had that space, so she was used to working real big. So I'm like, just make one of your, draw one of your paintings here, only do it like this big. And she'd be like, I don't know how to... And so it was interesting, the images that she made then. She ended up having two heads with their little kissy lips coming out together like that, you know. I mean, it was a real sweet image, but very unexpected when you look at the powerfulness of her other artwork. It's just...
Ginevra's ability to experiment is just part of the connection between the two women. Because they thought a lot alike, balancing experimentation with analysis.
She kept copious notes on everything, and I said, yeah, you were so good about keeping notes on everything about, oh, this wood is for this, or that picture is for that. She said, well, that's because I would forget, you know, if I didn't. So,
but still, to be so precise,
yeah,
you know, you think,
yeah.
I think anyway,
yeah,
of artists as, you know, just kind of going with the flow.
Oh, right.
And I know all artists can't do that.
Right.
I mean, there's still quite a variety of personalities, but that's an illustration of being meticulous.
Yes. And it's like if anybody that you've talked to would talk to that was a student of hers at the time, or there's a couple of people, one in our church that her granddaughter was inspired by Ginevra, and she said, I saw, and she said, I went into her studio, and she had paint all over the walls, she had paint all over everything, and I just thought, that's what I want to do, I want to make art, you know. And so it's interesting that she also has that, you know, kind of ordering side as well.
You can't rein it in a little bit, how can you finish?
Right. Right, right. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a little ADD in all of us, but it really helps to be able to carry through. I mean, at some point, that's the difference, is you have to focus on something to finish it. So, you know, and that's probably why I get along so well with her, because I have that too. I mean, I have people that said, oh, you should have been a math teacher. I have a real analytical side to my, you know, I have a real strong analytical side, but then I also have my, like, woo-ha, you know, fly by the seat of my pants too, so...
Being friends, Jenny helped Ginevra move into a new apartment, downsizing from a barn studio to a retirement home. And downsizing requires you to get rid of stuff. Some of that stuff Jenny held on to. Old brushes, photos, barn wood, a worn wood spoon. All tools of the trade. So when the idea to honor Ginevra with an original art project came about, Jenny had Ginevra's own items to include in the work.
So she was trying to throw out, this was an old woodcut of hers, and so what I did was I cut the woodcut in half, and then I started to frame it with the box, and then I photographed her hands with the brushes and stuff, because what I've learned from her as an artist, or one thing that she did, was she would photograph things, bring it into Kinko's, copy them, and enlarge them, and go and fit them into her paintings. Like, she might do, like, a couple of branches from that plant or something, and then she would collage it into her painting. And so that's why I did that with this. I thought, well, you know, I've got some of her wood spoons. This is great to touch if you actually... That's just plain wood that's rubbed from, you know, rubbing the prints. You have the wood cut, you roll the paint on the surface, you lay the paper on it, and then you rub it so that you're pressing the ink from the high points onto the paper and stuff, and then peel it back up. And that's why that spoon is, that's, and this one too, is from just from rubbing the print. And, you know, I couldn't see her throwing those things out, and I just, it gave me an outlet for them, because otherwise I would have just kept them in, I don't know. And this is actually one of her etchings, which is what I was showing them.
One of her,
it's an etching.
Oh, yeah.
It's an etching plate.
Uh-huh.
And I have a few of those, and of course she was going to throw those out too. And so this one fit in there nicely, and this is an actual picture of her. We figured she was probably about in her 40s when that photo was taken in her studio. So I thought, you know, it was a kind of a nice depiction of her, kind of how her hands were, how she is now and how she was then, and a little bit of how the kind of images that she liked.
One artist honoring another. One friend honoring another. Jenny created a piece to honor Ginevra Sloan using cast-off objects that Ginevra had used to create her art, and using techniques that she learned from Ginevra, and pictures of Ginevra as a creator. It is indeed a shrine to friendship and inspiration. Now, Jenny Rodd from that last installment has a sister who's also an artist. And I even own some of Rebecca Rodd's work. She does raku pottery with a spiritual side. You can see it at rrrpottery.com, and you might want to look at it now if you want a visual for this next piece. It's installment number 5 and the last in today's show. It comes from Rebecca Rodd's presentation at the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Palouse on Mother's Day 2006. It's about inspiration, both artistic and spiritual.
But I was 33 years old and well beyond all grown up when I found another mother who transformed my life, rebirthing me in a big way. I'm referring, of course, to the great mother, the mother of all, that we sang about in our opening hymn. The Greek poet Homer praised her with a hymn of his own over 2,800 years ago. Mother of us all, the oldest of all, hard and splendid as rock. Wherever there is that is of the land, it is she who nourishes it. It is the earth I sing. But this earth mother of Homer's time was preceded by a mother figure at least 20,000 years earlier, the mother of all mothers, whose nadir was in the Stone Age. Some of the earliest terms used to refer to her were woman mother, clan mother, or divine ancestor, because her greatness and her mystery was in giving birth, the newborn babies coming from her body alone, with no knowledge yet about the input of males in the process. A picture of one of the earliest images of the Great Mother is printed on the cover of your church bulletin this morning. Chances are you've seen her before. This carefully sculpted female figurine was found by an archaeologist in 1908 near the town of Willendorf, Austria. He named her after Venus, the Roman goddess of love and beauty, apparently as a bit of a joke, poking fun at her very un-Venus-like figure. But there she was, Venus of Willendorf, in all her fleshy glory, found beneath 9 archaeological layers near the Danube River. The latest study in 1990 of the site deposit there dates the figure to about 24 to 22,000 BCE, which makes her indeed, as Homer sings, a very old and splendid piece of rock. Specifically, she is limestone, and surprisingly small for the greatness and significance that has come to be attributed to her. At her full 4 3/8 inches in height, she would fit quite comfortably into the palm of your hand, where the articulations of her sculpted body could be experienced and appreciated as directly as they were probably intended to be. And there is much detail carved into this small figure. The largeness of her breasts and belly are obvious, but there are dimples sculpted at her knees, small marks that indicate bracelets at her wrists, visibly carved vulva, dare I mention it in church, and her hair is very detailed, made up of 7 concentric carved bands that look like braids encircling her head. All this packed into a small 4 3/8 inch Stone Age sculpture, carved and etched probably with the shard of stone or bone for a tool. Her purpose really has only been guessed at by archaeologists and anthropologists, as is the case with many prehistoric artifacts. But over the last century, this small image has come to be regarded as representative of the archetypal Great Mother. Her shape and features symbolize sustenance, sexuality, and abundance, attributes that have not only been universally desired but required through the ages to ensure the survival and continuation of human life. Is she evidence of a Stone Age spiritual life? Or an icon that proves Paleolithic reverence for a female deity? Archaeology is fraught with conjecture concerning objects dug up in its digs. So one man's Playboy Venus can become another person's goddess in a more enlightened era. One thing is certain, over the thousands of years since her own creation, this small Earth Mother has birthed a long line of descendant daughters, leaving a trail of shards that provide ample evidence of women's centrality in the creation and building up of major civilizations and cultures. Isis in Egypt, Ishtar in Babylonia, and Inanna, praised in stone in Mesopotamia with these words, "She in whom light appears, radiant one, guardian of all greatness, to my lady enfolded in beauty, sing praise." In the last few centuries BCE, the Great Mother continued to split and be split into Greek and Roman goddesses whose spheres of influence became more specialized. Agriculture, animal domestication, the arts, the home, religion, and other disciplines. And from them we get the myths and stories of Demeter and Persephone, Artemis and Diana, Athena, Vesta, and so on. This splitting seems to have happened to her in other cultures and religions as well, so that today we indeed have many, many names for the scattered aspects of the Great Mother. My own imagination was captivated by the original one, though, the oldest and splendid as rock mother of all. I gravitated to her early in her purest form, and the first clay goddess I made was a copy of the Venus of Willendorf. She became the breakthrough piece for my art and my spirituality, and this is how it happened. And I have her here on the altar, on the yellow paper there. She's a bit fragile, not been fired. So this is how it happened. The UI Women's Center, where I was spending my spare time between working at the library and taking clay classes in 1985, advertised a program where people were invited to come and share something they valued as a symbol for them. I decided to take my newly formed Venus figure with me, but first I needed to be able to articulate what it was about her that was so important to me. So I sat with her in my hand earlier that day and pondered her meaning. And it came to me in the form of a kind of poem, no less, which I can no longer find, but that went something like this. I am the creator, molding the clay, shaping the image that is myself. I am the image lying beneath layers, waiting to be recovered. And I am the archaeologist digging through layers, finding the image that is myself. I probably cannot fully relate to you what a huge aha moment that was for me. It was like time and space didn't exist, and I suddenly felt connected to something so much greater than myself. For the first time in my life, I felt like I had a purpose for being here, and it made all the difference in my life and art and spirituality. Some of you are familiar with my pottery and know that I have made my fair share of goddess figures, rattles, prayer bowls, and other spiritual tools over the years since then. My studio is littered with shards of pottery that I have broken purposefully and reassembled, and other pieces broken accidentally that I can't bring myself to throw away yet. I've also created larger sculptures like the one on the pedestal today that reflect a personal archaeology of brokenness and wholeness, self-discovery and empowerment. This particular one is called Many Names Call the One. And it is one, like Donna said, from my series I call Power Suits. It was hand-built from the bottom up with coils of terracotta clay melded together, smooth and shaped with a metal rib. When it reached the leather-hard stage, I incised the designs on it, which consist of over 150 names of goddesses and the cultures they came from. I carved lines down each side and drilled holes for the laces to make it look like you could put this power suit on. And what a support garment it would be, with all the power of those goddesses surrounding you. I fired it in sawdust in a way similar to the primitive firings, in direct contact with the fuel, not knowing how it would survive. Once fired, I broke it intentionally and removed one of the pieces and re-oxidized that piece to take out the smoke. Then I glued the whole thing back together to emphasize the archaeological reference of the whole piece. I appreciate that the spirituality of my work has touched many lives outside my own. When I exhibit at art shows, some people are moved to tell me surprisingly personal stories of their own struggles or concerns about friends or family, and their own joys too. People recognize the language of art that comes from deep within. Look again at the image of the Great Mother in your bulletin. Now maybe you can understand why I spent so much time on this particular image this morning. This small but great mother has birthed and nurtured over 20 of the most important years of my life, not to mention the lives of many others beginning thousands of years ago. What do you see when you look at her? What has nurtured your adult life? Blessed be.
You can see Rebecca Rod's work at rrrpottery.com. We're going to wrap up this Yin Radio show with more music from Kirsten Young. It's called For Us.
Sick, suck, the beating of
the timeless clock, the tide is high, and the ships are docked. He's at shore, waiting for the rain to pour. He's all alone, he wishes he could go home. He's barely there. Oh, the beautiful mind crosses that very thin line. For us the pain comes, for us the pain goes, but for him there's demons on the...
You can listen to past shows, or you can podcast this show, or sign up for our electronic newsletter at yinradio.org. You can drop us a line at yinradio@vpfound.org. That's yinradio at V as in voice, P as in power, found.org. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho. I am Sandy Billings, your executive producer and host. Opening music is by Piano Chocolat. Yin Radio is a production of VP Foundation. Thanks for joining me. Until next week.
For us the dark comes. For us the dark goes. But for him, it creeps up and swallows. It creeps up and swallows.